Welcome again to Parhesia Hour on K-Chung. I am your host, Kern Haug, and we are joined again by Stephen Lee Clark.
What's up?
So today, we decided to choose a topic that I came across getting juice at a juice bar in my neighborhood. The owner of the juice bar, who's a very kind, sharp-minded, generous individual, was giving me a rundown of what he had available and all the variously healthy things that I could order from him. And one had this... He was saying this word, and I didn't know what he was talking about. And I asked him, I was like, what are you saying there? And he said, oh, it has monoatomic gold in it. And I was like, man, never heard of that. What is this drink that has monoatomic gold? And he's like, oh, it's the substance that decalcifies the pineal gland. I don't know if that's the first thing he said, but he just really told me a lot about it. I was like, wow, that sounds interesting. I want to learn more about this because I don't understand it, but it sounds fantastic.
I never realized when you were telling me that he had a drink offered at that place with it inside, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I know. I guess I thought I walked by it on the way here this morning. I was like, should I go in and buy it? That actually, in retrospect, that would have been a good idea.
I
could have been sipping on it right now and reporting on the perceived effects of it. And we'll get into that, the perceived effects and the effects, claimed effects. But yeah, so Steve and I did some research looking into this, and it sort of led us down various paths. And we thought we'd sort of get into that and share some of the things we've found in looking into this thing that this nice guy told me about. Mm-hmm. And wanting to know more about it. So, we found some interesting things, and some of it gets into the science of it, the, you know, pseudoscience, the alchemy, kind of, and just really down a long train of things.
And it was fairly hard to research, wasn't it? Was it for you?
Yeah.
To
yeah.
find, like, actual information instead of, like, speculation into what it does and all the crazy side effects and altering your frequency vibrations and all this crazy stuff. But yeah, it was pretty hard to sift through all that stuff.
Yeah, because many of the first things that pop up are, it doesn't really talk about how it works, but rather is like, it'll activate your third eye and you'll sort like gain these, like, really increase your intuitive powers. And really, if you take enough of it in properly, you'll start glowing. And it ends up relating a lot back to theories about ancient Egypt harvesting this in order to sort of, make their pharaohs these godlike beings and to really prop them up in that way. And so that's where we're starting, where there's a lot of things about it to make one skeptical. And we thought, why not see what value we can extract from this? So I think one of the places we first started was, okay, let's just try to be really hard on this and see, is this, like, try to figure out some of the science behind it to see, is this possible?
Yeah, figure out if it's possible in the first place.
Yeah, and I guess the first thing was, okay, what is monoatomic? Like, what, it's sort of separating out single atoms.
Yeah, well, it's all in the name, monoatomic. So it's like... It's a single atom of gold, right?
Yeah.
And so me and you were like, is that possible to separate a single atom from a bar of gold or whatever? And then it kind of made me think of, like, the process of gold plating, which I've been pretty impressed. Like, it's a lot more, like, alchemic, like, process than people would think, you know. And if you don't know, the process of gold plating is attaching a piece of gold to one side of a container and whatever you're plating to another side, filling up the middle with this like solution and it's some sort of acid, and then running charges like voltage through it, and it delivers like really fast, like these ions shoot across this solution and attach itself to whatever you're plating.
Right, because I think you were saying how you sort of charge the thing you want to plate with either positive or negative, charge the gold with the opposite.
Positive, and then the negative side is the gold, so it goes from negative to positive, and it shoots across this solution, which I always found like super interesting, because people see gold-plated things, like silver-plated things all the time, and just like the process of plating it is really crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so we were talking about, is it possible to knock off a single atom of gold off of a bar? And we dug in, did a little research, found out you can bombard something with ions, and it would so you have the same concept. You have a negatively charged or a positively charged piece of anything, and then you have your gold. You bombard it with ions, creating a certain charge, depending what sort of ions you use, and then it can knock off atoms of gold, and it sticks to whatever you set up for it to stick to.
So the idea, kind of assuming that if you bind each atom, because you're consuming many single atoms, I guess, mm-hmm. gold in a form that's rare to find, and so we're thinking that would suggest if you bind to something,
have to bind it to something,
bound to something,
exactly, yeah.
So we were thinking, okay, from that knowledge, seems like this could be conceivably accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's knowledge that I went on. There was in Googling it. Rational Wiki is a page I came across, and they explain some things that I didn't understand, and we can get into that more a little bit later.
Well, that was the other thing that was hard about researching this, because I feel like me and you are pretty efficient at researching something we don't know about. However, like, we're not chemists. So I was reading a lot of stuff that was just like, oh, man, it was taking me down all these different, like, branches. Like, okay, I read this, about the original subject, but then, shit, I have to look up, like, 5 words to figure out what this sentence means.
Yeah.
And then so I would get distracted doing that, and it was pretty hard. But I feel like we did a pretty good job for something that is, like, light years above our head.
And it was kind of funny, because in looking up even just the skeptical things, like, Rational Wiki is like, well, this isn't possible because of this. And I'm like, huh, I'm sort of taking just as much a leap of faith to believe them, that source, as I would the other source.
Yeah.
And just one source is calling themselves Rational Wiki and being like, this is a pseudoscience, sort of coming from this perspective of authority, where they don't seem to feel the need to question themselves, because they've decided that they are operating with reason that
rationale.
That they don't seem to think is worth questioning, I guess.
Yeah. Well, my conspiracy mind, like, I started researching and was coming up with a lot more sources telling me how ridiculous it is and how silly the notion is and how it doesn't work and how it's dangerous for you and, like, how it's all these different things in a negative light. But then, obviously, that made me think, like, why don't they want me to know about this? You know, what's the reasoning? How come it's so much harder to find good, solid information on either side? Because it's just telling me that it doesn't work and telling me that it's harmful without providing reasons was kind of bothering me. And so, yeah, it kind of sent me in this path. Like, I don't really... It made me doubt the naysayers, you know?
Yeah. And cause especially, I think, when someone is quick to dismiss a thing as saying, well, everything I understand doesn't allow for this. Mm-hmm. Like, everything I understand about this topic, it doesn't add up, which I think is sort of a naive perspective, in that there's so many things one doesn't understand. And while, yes, you could run various tests and come to certain conclusions, it's sort of like what I ended up asking a lot of, like, what's allowing you to decide definitively when you're done thinking about a thing and stopping that. Because, yeah, like, why... And it is, why wouldn't someone want you to know? I mean, there are many things in the world, I suppose, that are sort of specifically suppressed. Mm-hmm. And this one, although I had to say, I ended up coming to this conclusion of, okay, this is a supplement that you can buy. You can buy it on certain websites, but it's surprisingly rare. There ended up being a bunch of YouTube videos of people showing you how to make it, mm-hmm. but you really have to have some equipment to do that. And I thought, I was like, huh, I would think that there would at least be more more people trying to make money off this. It's like a white powder you can buy.
Yeah.
And I guess I found this initially being sold in a juice. But I was like, oh, there aren't more people trying to make money off this, which is funny because I feel like that's always the number one motivator or the easiest motivator for like nefarious intentions.
Yeah. Did you come across any sort of like regulations on selling this sort of thing, or is it?
I think it's in an unregulated position, like which can happen with a lot of stuff, I think.
Because it also seems that if it's so harmful and doesn't do anything and it's a waste of time, that maybe if it's harmful, it seems strange that it's just totally fine to sell it.
Yeah, there are though. I remember. Things like someone showing me this funny video of like gardening on salvia, or like that's a legal thing.
Yeah.
I knew someone who she worked at this research chemical shop in Japan where she said it was basically drugs that had just been invented in a lab and had names like CPS-52.
Yeah,
and so they would really they fucked you up, but they were so new that and constantly evolving that there were no laws, so they just sort of were able to.
Yeah, I've come across some weird named drugs in the world.
Yeah, like and that. So I suppose it could operate in that spot. But the most curious thing is that neither of us were able to find like a mechanism of action. So we're like, okay, it seems like the substance could exist. Like this could be like a real thing, but once you ingest it, what's it doing?
Exactly.
And your body. And so most of the claims seem to talk about the pineal gland, which is something that people had brought up to me in the past. It's an endocrine gland in the vertebrae of the brain, and it, according, you know, on Wikipedia, it mostly talks about how it produces melatonin, which I know is that thing you can take to go to sleep. It's sort of between the two hemispheres of the brain, and while the contemporary understanding of it is pretty bland, just produces melatonin. Which is a serotonin-derived hormone. Many people, like big people, have spent a lot of their time researching the pineal gland, which is that which monoatomic gold, I guess, claims to act on. Like Descartes saw it as the principal seat of the soul, and he saw it as the third eye. It's often referred to as the third eye. And it was seen as this sort of way of... getting the mind and the body to be in tune, which is what this guy at the juice place was telling me. Basically, sort of this route to getting you to sort of exist beyond your, I guess, your corporeal, like, strappings, I suppose.
I think the way I always understood it is that it's the gland that keeps you... or prevents you from being in tune with like the vibrations around you. So like the standing resonance of the universe. That's how I always looked at it.
Yeah.
And I think if I'm not mistaken, it's what releases when you die. It's what releases all the DMT chemicals in your brain, and that's like supposedly some sort of your body's way of just transitioning you into death instead of just this shockingly painful or blah blah blah, something like that.
Yeah.
which is pretty interesting.
And it seemed, I was looking it up, and it mostly forms by age 2. Like, it sort of is done developing, which kind of, that was interesting to me in that, or a lot of the calcification of it will happen later. And that's a real thing. I was looking that up. Mm-hmm. It definitely is a thing that will calcify over time and does have, like, restricted... movement, and it's mostly active when you're young, which kind of made me instantly think of, when people talk about certain artists and whatnot, people who perhaps could be easily said to be in tune with certain forces, are like childlike and like didn't grow up and stayed in tune with their childlike thing.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, this
imagination
seems to have a,
and like stuff like that.
Like a relation to that. Somebody like held on to that state pre-calcified pineal gland. And so that kind of was adding up. And I think that was what I ended up finding a lot was, if you dig into the science of these things, they're basically not understood. Where you can look up a lot of chemicals, and they'll be like, here's the diagram, here's its method of action, here's how it works, this is exactly what's happening, and you're like, cool, someone totally knows how this works. Whereas these were these areas where it's like, not clear how it works, which, good reason to be skeptical, but throughout time, people have been like, had this kind of hunch that it does, there's something important about this.
Yeah.
And
and you got to wonder why.
Yeah.
It's been stuck around for so long.
Yeah, to me, that's ideas. Convinced me. You know, and I think it's oftentimes the difference between some random person who you don't, how you have reason to distrust telling you about something, and then someone who you're like, oh, that person's really smart. Like,
yeah.
That was a guy who convinced me not to shampoo. Like, it was like, I felt like I had some, like, kind of like typical hippie types be like, no, shampoo, not good for your hair, blah, blah. And I was like, sure, okay.
Yeah.
And then I worked with this like very gentlemanly kind of like dude who was very, I don't know, well-groomed, I suppose. And he was like, no, I don't use shampoo. Like, I haven't used that stuff for a year. Like, first 2 weeks, it's itchy, you don't like it, but then your body learns to regulate. And then I was like, oh, and I listened to him. And then he later told me he learned that from Andrew WK. And I was like, okay, it's like all coming together.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I felt like the source of information or where it comes from can give it a lot of credit or do the opposite effect, I
absolutely.
Suppose. Like what? It was like George Bataille was another guy who saw as the pineal eye and saw it as a blind spot in Western reality, which I thought was a cool way of putting it. And I don't know much about George Bataille, but I just was outside of a noise show once and ended up talking about Satanism and critical theorists, and this guy was like, Bataille's my guy. And we laughed, and I was like, I'm going to look that guy up later. And mostly, I have been led to this.
Yeah, yeah.
But because he had that catchy phrase, I wanted to know more.
It's all about the packaging and the delivery.
Yeah, yeah. And the dude who discovered, Ormus is kind of one of the popular names for monoatomic gold, and it was a guy named David Hudson came across it in 1975, and he's honestly, the thing is, while I remember trying to watch his lectures and sort of being like, man, he's just talking forever without really explaining what I want to know, so that was a little grating. He spent his whole life like spending like millions of dollars researching this and creating patents to like extract monoatomic gold, so there's something about this he was like very
convinced.
Yeah, like he was like, I'm set up on this. And yeah, I think a lot of it was kind of coming across that these topics were things that you couldn't, like, it kind of became quickly established that our modern understanding of science and how molecules interact with the human body cannot explain it. Just like kind of straight up is like, nah, this
which doesn't automatically discredit it to me.
Exactly.
You know, this is, yeah, me and you talked about this. So it's like, it seemed to me what kind of got me about this was there was this real like push, and the word pseudoscience was thrown around a lot, which I'm totally into, but there is a stigma where when someone now hears the word pseudoscience, it's kind of just automatically discredits it. And so people can still entertain it, but and once that word is attached to something, it just gives it like lesser value as to mainstream science. And it's not how I like to, you know, look at science nowadays.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer. And honestly, the whole thing with all the monatomic gold and how we were talking about, it was really reminding me of like all the alchemy books that I've read in the past, where they would work on like atomic levels and manipulate certain materials on an atomic level. And like, obviously, like the end game was to make the Philosopher's Stone to turn different things into gold on an atomic level. And that just like struck me, because in the end, it it's a science that branched off of our mainstream science like thousands of years ago. And so there's no, it doesn't seem unlikely to me that like it could have branched off a long time ago and just carried on its own path and developed all its own methods that were tried and tested the same way our science is, but minus like, I don't know, trillions of dollar profit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just, it was interesting to me, like the whole like alchemy aspect of this thing, because I've read a lot about it in the past. And then when you brought this up to me, I started reading about it and it was just really striking a chord with that sort of thing. But
yeah, I think even the label pseudo, you know, saying it's just fake science, which is kind of right away implying it's trying to be science but failing. And I remember seeing some bumper sticker someone had. It's like, I am not a failed attempt at being you. And I was like, that's a pretty good way of, I thought it was like, it seemed like an almost like anti-yuppie sort of thing. Like, hey, you know how you yuppie, you think that I'm just trying to be you and I'm not?
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm not trying. And I feel like that's the more proper way. It's like the pseudoscience thing. It's like, no, we're not trying to be you and failing to understand your principles. Like, we're on this other kick.
Well, it's the same thing. It's like a person that has branched off from this like path of someone's life like a long time ago and decided to go on their own path. Same sort of thing.
And it's like, yeah, you can disagree about which path is better, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
And people will disagree, but I like to see it as there's value in many paths.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the one way that will yield value, I suppose.
True. Yeah.
And in that thing, it was like pseudo, like alchemy was sort of pre-science, and that there was some article on like the Smithsonian website about like alchemy not the kind of crazy thing that we once thought it was. And they've sort of been recently discovering that a lot of things that alchemists were doing research on are actually really useful,
mm-hmm.
and but were often written in code, sort of,
mm-hmm.
where it would basically, because it was occult stuff that was like, mm-hmm. they could get killed, like mm-hmm. burned for working on this. That was like Newton went off in the forest for like 15 years, Isaac Newton, to do alchemy research, because he's like, I have to keep this a secret because I'm not allowed to talk about this. And they found out that once they learned to read what they were talking about, like go into the cave and find the slithering snake, they like found that stood in for a certain chemical.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I guess what we're kind of saying here, like it was like contemporary science not being able to understand the principles of this past thing, and so and therefore being like, I don't understand it, therefore I declare it nonsense. And it's like, okay, no.
Yeah. And also I, from what I've like read about, like a lot of the secrecy surrounding alchemy was because once you get to this sort of level, you're going through these processes for years and years and years, some of which take, you know, 10, 15 years in for one process. You're learning a lot of stuff and you're becoming more understanding of the world around you. But then at the same time, you're learning like a lot of really like dangerous stuff too. And so I think that, from what I understand, that was a big part of the secrecy was like, okay, well, this knowledge we are acquiring is actually really dangerous. And on an atomic level, I could blow up this mountain on accident, you know? So it was more of like, we need to make sure that this just doesn't like get totally out and we need to keep it in this like sort of small bubble of people.
And I think that danger probably really is a thing in that this one video about, I was watching this video about chemistry, just try to understand how this could work. And in it, the guy was talking about, he's like, I think the moment that alchemy turned to chemistry was when, oh, it was the guy who invented a lot of modern chemistry, French dude, totally forgetting, but not super important at the moment. Could put it on the Tumblr later. Mm-hmm. kchungradio.parhijao, or the opposite, kchungradio.tumblr.com. He said it was the law of conservation of matter, that kind of thing. Like, you can't create or destroy. It's just transferring of matter. And he basically, and he was seeing alchemy as not observing that, like trying to create something out of something that isn't there, like creating a valuable material out of an unvaluable material. And I'm thinking that's a misunderstanding. I think alchemy totally had that accounted for. Like, it wasn't failing to account for that so much as the things that got exchanged were dangerous things, like sort of not directly attached to the equation at hand, but like in that show, the anime Full Metal Alchemist, it was if you try to do something like bring someone back to life, you're gonna pay for it by like losing your arm, or one character loses her unborn baby, and so it's not, it's like literally in the equation. Yes, this matter isn't accounted for, but energy outside, which I sort of like that holistic view of reactions is not happening in a vacuum, literally where things are, and it actually was accounted for in this scary way. We're like, oh, if I make this, like if I'm not getting the matter here in this reaction, like it's going to come from somewhere else, like someone's paying for this, and like, and that has its own like darkness to it.
Totally. It's an interesting thought, you know, like just how it's just, it doesn't necessarily, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to convince people of this like validity of something after they've been like traversed this like mainstream science path for a long time. And I think we kind of did a good job. I'm like kind of proud of us for how we researched this crazy chemical like compounds and interactions, and it was pretty hard. But I enjoyed our outcomes for the most part.
It really, to me, it got me just really thinking about kind of how much there is to understand, or how much could be understood, deciding when I do understand a thing or not. And finding out a whole bunch. And we haven't forgotten about music on the show either. Not that that's like a requirement, but Steven brought in some music.
I did.
That he's going to have to head out early.
Yeah, it's a sad affair today. I have some prior engagements that I have to take care of, but it's the only time that will happen because this show is a lot more fun than work. So
but and I like to think about music that sort of incorporates, oh man, that's the one, well maybe I'll get to it, like that incorporates real, like uses different ways of understanding perhaps even rhythm or melody or pitch, and like really kind of, you know, you can say like this is the way to construct a, like you can value a song based on, oh, it has this many people play, like liked it on the radio and stuff like that, and you could say like that's the definition of validity, like this song has gotten this many, it's this true. Many plays sort of thing, versus like what did this lead me to sort of thing, like and I guess that's sort of why I think these investigations are complementary, like two being paired with music on a radio program, which is pretty tight. Did you want to play this?
Is it Dust?
First song?
Yeah. It's Dust, Cave Dweller, off of their EP Onset of Decimation, Mannequin Records. Really cool shit. Played with this band a couple years ago, saw them live, thought it was fucking amazing. So, yeah, Dust.
We'll be right back.
That was Glass Candy with The Chameleon. And before that was IMS, International Music System, with the song Dancing Therapy. So, after that musical break, I thought we'd sort of conclude the show with what I sort of ended up taking away from this research into Ormus, or monoatomic gold, which was realizing that I was running into many various systems of knowing, is what I decided to call it. Then when I Googled ways of knowing, I found out that's a thing. Or rather, you just type in ways of knowing, and you know how now when you Google things, it like a word, it just defines it right away. You don't have to click on a link. Google does that for theory of knowledge. And I thought this was sort of interesting. Until the fall of 2014, very recently, there were only four ways of knowing: sense, perception, reason, emotion, and language. But the IB curriculum then changed to include four other ways of knowing: intuition, imagination, faith, and memory. So, I want to focus on one peculiar aspect of that sentence I just read. Until the fall of 2014, there were only four ways of knowing. Now, that strikes me as funny, because instead of saying, until the fall of 2014, this organization only understood or recognized or had some sense of four ways of knowing, it was like, there only were four ways of knowing. So, whatever. I won't get too hung up on that, but I think it's just very representative of the general attitude we were kind of discussing in sort of labeling a thing as a pseudoscience or failing to be like another. Like, basically, sort of comparison and saying, like, I don't understand it, therefore this has less value because it's outside of my way of knowing. Also, I mean, it's sort of telling the things they added on: intuition, imagination, faith, and memory. Those are all, let's see, if we say within our lifetime, or let's just say the last century to expand beyond our lifetime, we've sort of, at least I feel like I grew up with a heavy emphasis on, you know, the harder the science, the harder the knowledge, like the more real. And that's cool. Like, I think there's a lot to be gained from that. I've talked with, like, you know, if physics is the sort of hardest, like, it's, I think that's super interesting that you can find principles that stay true over time and space, and you're like, cool, this can be reproduced over and over again, and that's really interesting. And that usually is happening at a, like, you know, the atomic level. That's a way of knowing that a thing happens for sure. There are just many other things. I mean, that's a lot of quantum physics is sort of the way of kind of going in at the quantum level, just the very small, like impossibly small level, and observing what's actually happening. Like, for example, electrons aren't in a stiff orbit around a nucleus. They're really kind of creating, they're a wave, like acting in this pattern that kind of, one person described it as a site of excitation. And they're kind of creating this frequency that they're, that creates a shape. And based on that shape, they're able to have certain interactions, like kind of create a code that will communicate a certain thing to other atoms. And, you know, each molecule is going to have that going on within it. And you'll see I'm perhaps having a sort of a, I'm going to talk about a lot of things at once, this sort of multi-pronged approach, which these guys, I read this chapter, Rhizome, of like Deleuze and Guattari. It was, they're using this metaphor of like rhizome plant structures to explain how to build like a system. Like, for like, their brains are just like flying all over the place writing this book where they're saying all these things. You're like, man, this is super inaccessible, but sort of exciting to see how you're explaining this. You probably could have condensed this to many fewer pages, but I had fun sort of getting the point. And they were kind of saying like an ant colony, you know, you can like attack an ant colony, but it's not centrally located like a root. It's not like you cut the root and then it's done. It's got this really spread out approach to something, which I think is a lot of how intuition, imagination, faith, memory, those are all sort of easily fallible modes of knowing something. And so I think that was often thrown out as like, oh, well, we see the potential for this being manipulated and wrong already, so let's not trust it at all, whereas that's missing out on this whole base of knowledge. And so I kind of was realizing that that's really, systems of knowing are often based off like, when do you decide that you have adequate proof of something? Like, when are you satisfied with the information you have and you decide you can move forward and make actions with that? For example, where I was getting that juice and I learned about monoatomic gold, the guy there was fairly satisfied to tell me that monoatomic gold would do these things for me. And I thought, I was like, that's interesting. However, I want to learn more. I am not quite satisfied with believing this at face value. I want to, like, learn about it for myself. And so sort of making that decision, whereas I see when a someone labels something a pseudoscience, they've said, oh, they have taken these logical leaps and decided that they don't need to know the chemistry that I know in order to make these claims. And I think that's fair. Like, I'm not saying there's no such thing as a pseudoscience or pseudo whatever. Like there is a lot of stuff that's not good. But I think mostly what's not good about it is the room for exploitation that comes along with sort of deciding you don't need to know more, just trust me. And yeah, there's a lot of iffy things that come up, but I really like to dig into someone and ask what is the proof that led you to feel so confidently about what you're speaking of? Like, why is that enough? Like, why are you ready to stop there? And I feel like oftentimes, you know, it's as simple as someone just starts believing what benefits, what makes them feel like a good person. It's often, you know, it's their ideology. I guess ideology is when you sort of stop questioning. You just assume certain things to be natural and just true, like truisms about existence. And I think one that I thought was sort of interesting in looking up this Ormus monoatomic gold, there was a website that seems pretty into it. It was like Subtle Energies. And they have a FAQ, and it says, question, will the, quote, good stuff, the real white powder gold, allow me to ascend? And I kind of like their answer. They're like, people are always thinking about the ability of the white powder of gold to act as a sort of enlightenment pill. An enlightenment pill would be some substance that would cause any person who take it to instantly transcend, ascend, awaken, or see God. Belief in the concept of an enlightenment pill seems to be rooted in the deeper belief that enlightenment can come from outside of the self. The belief is almost the same as the belief that someone else is responsible for the mess that I am in right now. Let's imagine that Ormus elements can improve the connection to spirit. Now let's pretend that each of us is actually responsible for everything which has ever happened to us. Imagine that you're responsible for the manifestation of what you want and also responsible for the manifestation of what you don't want in your life. If the Ormus elements are a connecting medium between spirit and mind/matter, then they might work sort of like the air which connects us with the resonance of sound. I can speak, and if the air is thick enough to sustain life, you can hear what I say. If the air is thicker, like at sea level, the sound of my voice will travel faster, and yeah, underwater sound travels faster and clearer than if the air is thinner. They go on for a little while, but I sort of liked how they questioned, okay, why are you asking, will it help you ascend? Is it because you're going into this saying, like, I want something and I'm not interested in understanding it fully. I just want to take something that'll instantly reveal things to me. And I feel like that's actually, like, or definitely a fairly common attitude today, is that to have a proof, but if a thing doesn't present itself immediately as being immediately obvious, it's tossed out. Whereas often the cases that I have found is that just that I don't know enough to understand it. That was personally share a thing, was I remember growing up, you know, being an arrogant teenager who thought I knew all these things. I think Anthony Braxton says the arrogance of youth. You're like, I know everything, and I would learn about concepts and be like, that doesn't make sense to me. They're dumb. Turns out I was dumb and I just wasn't smart enough to understand what was happening. And so, and I, man, went through this thing of being like, wow, all these things that I once tossed out as just goofy were simply beyond my ability to understand. Like, there were more forces at work in the world than I was aware of. And many things revealed themselves to me as I started learning more about the world. And I think that's a generally useful attitude for, I don't know, I'm just going to say for, like, not being an asshole, to just kind of, you know, like, oh, someone told me something. I don't understand it. Doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to look into the, I'm going to assume that there's something going on here that I don't understand. Honestly, actually, now that I'm saying that, I'm realizing that reminds me of something. I was looking through these old photo albums of that my grandma keeps, and someone had put this clipping. It was like her grandma had given her some advice, and it was like the criteria of emotional maturity. And there was one of it was like the ability to deal constructively with reality, the capacity to adapt to change, relative freedom from symptoms that are produced by tensions and anxieties, the capacity to find more satisfaction in giving than receiving, the capacity to relate to other people in a consistent manner with mutual satisfaction and helpfulness, the capacity to sublimate, to direct one's instinctive hostile energy into creative and constructive outlets. And the last one is the capacity to love. And I saw that and I was like, okay, I only understood that through understanding love as a concept where it's just really embracing a whole thing, you know, flaws and all. And I'm saying thing because I'm not just talking about people. And I guess I liked that is what I'm saying, is that if you can think you're being open and loving towards a thing, but if you're not embracing its negative qualities alongside of its positive qualities, if you're not seeing all of it and trying to understand what makes it it, then you're always going to have a hard time interacting with it, because you're going to be sort of imposing the shape on it that you see versus being like, what is this actually, instead of going in with so many preconceptions. That's what I think. That's my understanding of the easy to throw out, all you need is love. I don't know. It's such a vague statement. Of course, it's a song. What's that Voltaire quote? Like, anything too stupid to be said is sung. But, you know, I kind of get it. Or rather, I heard that as a teenager, was like, that's dumb. This guy's dumb. And then I learned a bunch of things and was like, oh, that's what he was getting at, but just putting it in fewer words. Anyway, I wanted to close out this show. We'll be back in a couple weeks here on Parhesia Hour. K-Chung. 2 weeks. I'm looking at a calendar to see what date that is. That is the 20th. May 20th. We'll be back. And we've got some kind of topics that we'll bring up next time, Steven and I, that I'm kind of excited to get into. And I want to close out with some music from Lil Ugly Mane, who recently put out a tape of a bunch of, I don't know, just material he hadn't put out before. And he kind of goes all over the place. And I just think it's rad stuff. So thanks for listening to Parhesia Hour. I'm Kern Haug, and yeah, hope to hear from you sometime once we incorporate that. Bye.
never heard of. A wordsmith derby in the first person. Y'all should work in the verses. Legacies dispersing. A rap assassin on the burn laps around.